Entitlement. She didn't want to know what he meant. Aleid took as silent a step as she could down the stairs. She had to get away.
Kaltain,
her uncle rumbled. A demand and a threat and a promise. The silent young woman, the one who never spoke, who never looked at anything, who had such marks on her. Aleid had seen her only a few times, had seen how little she responded or fought back. And then Aleid was walking up the stairs. Up and up, making sure her chains clanked as loudly as possible, her uncle fell silent. She rounded the next landing, and there they were. Kaltain had been shoved up against the wall, the neck of that too flimsy gown tugged to the side, her breast nearly out. There was such emptiness on her face, as if she weren't even there at all. Vernon stood a few paces away. Aleid clutched her linens so hard she thought she'd shred them. Wished she had those iron nails for once.
"Lady Kaltain,"
she said to the young woman, barely a few years older than she. She did not expect her own rage, did not expect herself to go on to say,
"I was sent to find you, lady. This way, please."
"Who sent for her?"
Vernon demanded. Aleid met his gaze and did not bow her head, not an inch.
"The wingleader."
"The wingleader isn't authorized to meet with her."
"And you are?"
Aleid set herself between them, though it would do no good should her uncle decide to use force. Vernon smiled.
"I was wondering when you'd show your fangs, Aleid.
Or should I say, your iron teeth?"
He knew then.
Aleid stared him down and put a light hand on Kaltain's arm. She was as cold as ice. She didn't even look at Aleid.
"If you'd be so kind, lady," Aleid said,
tugging on that arm, clutching the laundry with her other hand. Kaltain mutely started into a walk. Vernon chuckled.
"You two could be sisters,"
he said casually.
"Fascinating,"
Aleid said, guiding the lady up the steps, even as the effort to keep her balanced made her leg throb in agony.
"Until next time,"
her uncle said from behind them, and she didn't want to know who he meant. In silence, her heart pounding so wildly that she thought she might vomit, Aleid led Kaltain up to the next landing and let go of her long enough to open the door and guide her into the hall. The lady paused, staring at the stone, at nothing.
"Where do you need to go?"
Aleid asked her softly. The lady just stared. In the torchlight, the scar on her arm was gruesome.
Who had done that?
Aleid put a hand on the woman's elbow again.
"Where can I take you that is safe?"
Nowhere. There was nowhere here that was safe. But slowly, as if it took her a lifetime to remember how to do it, the lady slid her eyes to Aleid. Darkness and death and black flame, despair and rage and emptiness. And yet, a kernel of understanding. Kaltain merely walked away, that dress hissing on the stones. There were bruises that looked like fingerprints around her other arm, as if someone had gripped her too hard. This place. These people. Aleid fought her nausea, watching until the woman vanished around a corner. Manon was seated at her desk, staring at what appeared to be a letter, when Aleid entered the tower.
"Did you get into the chamber?"
the witch said, not bothering to turn around. Aleid swallowed hard.
"I need you to get me some poison."
Chapter 33. Standing in a wide clearing among the stacks of crates, Adian blinked against the late morning sun slanting through the windows high up in the warehouse. He was already sweating, and in dire need of water as the heat of the day turned the warehouse suffocating. He didn't complain. He demanded to be allowed to help, and Aelin had refused. He'd insisted he was fit to fight, and she had merely said, "Prove it." So here they were. He and the Fey Prince had been going through a workout routine with sparring sticks for the past 30 minutes, and it was thoroughly kicking his ass. The wound on his side was one wrong move away from splitting, but he gritted through it. The pain was welcome, considering the thoughts that had kept him up all night, that Rowan Evelyn had never told him, that his mother had died to conceal the knowledge of who sired him, that he was half-fae, and that he might not know for another decade how he would age, if he would outlast his queen. And his father, Gavriel, that was a whole other path to be explored. Later. Perhaps it'd be useful if Maeve made good on the threat she posed, now that one of his father's legendary companions was hunting Aelin in this city. Lorcan. Shit. The stories he'd heard about Lorcan had been full of glory and gore, mostly the latter. A male who didn't make mistakes, and who was ruthless with those who did. Dealing with the King of Otterlin was bad enough, but having an immortal enemy at their backs? Shit. And if Maeve ever saw fit to send Gavriel over here, Adian would find a way to endure it, as he'd found a way to endure everything in his life. Adian was finishing a maneuver with the stick that the prince had shown him twice now, when Aelin paused her own exercising. "I think that's enough for today," she said, barely winded. Adian stiffened at the dismissal already in her eyes. He'd been waiting all morning for this. For the past 10 years he had learned everything he could from mortals. If warriors came to his territory, he'd use his considerable charms to convince them to teach him what they knew. And whenever he'd ventured outside of his lands, he'd made a point to glean as much as he could about fighting and killing from whoever lived there. So pitting himself against a purebred Fey warrior, direct from Doranel, was an opportunity he couldn't waste. He wouldn't let his cousin's pity wreck it. "I heard a story," Adian drawled to Rowan, "that you killed an enemy warlord using a table." "Please," Aelin said. "Who the hell told you that?"
"Quinn, your uncle's captain of the guard. He was an admirer of Prince Rowan's. He knew all the stories."
Aelin slid her eyes to Rowan, who smirked, bracing his sparring stick on the floor. "You can't be serious," she said.
"What, you squashed him to death like a pressed grape?"
Rowan choked.
"No, I didn't squash him like a grape."
He gave the queen a feral smile.
"I ripped the leg off the table and impaled him with it."
"Clean through the chest and into the stone wall," Adian said.
"Well," said Aelin, snorting, "I'll give you points for resourcefulness, at least."
Adian rolled his neck. "Let's get back to it."
But Aelin gave Rowan a look that pretty much said, "Don't kill my cousin, please. Call it off." Adian gripped the wooden sparring stick tighter.
"I'm fine."
"A week ago," Aelin said, "you had one foot in the afterworld. Your wound is still healing.
We're done for today, and you're not coming out."
"I know my limits, and I say I'm fine."
Rowan's slow grin was nothing short of lethal. An invitation to dance. And that primal part of Adian decided it didn't want to flee from the predator in Rowan's eyes. No, it very much wanted to stand its ground and roar back. Aelin groaned, but kept her distance. "Prove it," she'd said.
Well, he would.
Adian gave no warning as he attacked, feinting right and aiming low. He'd killed men with that move, sliced them clean in half. But Rowan dodged him with brutal efficiency, deflecting and positioning to the offensive. And that was all that Adian managed to see before he brought up his stick on pure instinct. Bracing himself against the force of Rowan's blow had his side bleeding in pain. But he kept focused, even though Rowan had almost knocked the stick from his hands. He managed to strike the next blow himself. But as Rowan's lips tugged upward, Adian had the feeling that the prince was toying with him. Not for amusement. No, to prove some point. Red mist coated his vision. Rowan went to sweep his legs out, and Adian stomped hard enough on Rowan's stick that it snapped in two. As it did, Adian twisted, lunging to bring his own stick straight into Rowan's face. Gripping the two pieces in either hand, the Fey warrior dodged, going low, and Adian didn't see the second blow coming to his legs. Then he was blinking at the wooden beams of the ceiling, gasping for breath, as the pain from his wound arced through his side.
Rowan snarled down at him. One piece of the stick angled to cut his throat, while the other pushed against his abdomen, ready to spill his guts.
Holy burning hell.
Adian had known he'd be fast and strong.
But this?
Having Rowan fight alongside the Bane might very well decide battles in any sort of war.
Gods.
His side hurt badly enough he thought he might be bleeding. The Fey Prince spoke so quietly that even Aelin couldn't hear.
Your queen gave you an order to stop, for your own good, because she needs you healthy, and because it pains her to see you injured. Do not ignore her command next time.
Adian was wise enough not to snap a retort, nor to move as the prince dug in the tips of his sticks a little harder.
And,
Rowan added,
if you ever speak to her again the way you did last night, I'll rip out your tongue and shove it down your throat. Understand?
With the stick at his neck, Adian couldn't nod without impaling himself on the jagged end, but he breathed,
Understood, Prince.
Adian opened his mouth again as Rowan backed away, about to say something he would surely regret, when a bright hello sounded. They all whirled, weapons up, as Lysandra closed the rolling door behind her, boxes and bags in her arms. She had an uncanny way of sneaking into places unnoticed. Lysandra took two steps, that stunning face grave, and stopped dead as she beheld Rowan. Then his queen was suddenly moving, snatching some of the bags from Lysandra's arms and steering her into the apartment a level above. Adian eased from where he'd been sprawled on the ground.
Is that Lysandra?
Rowan asked.
Not too bad on the eyes, is she?
Rowan snorted.
Why is she here?
Adian gingerly prodded the wound in his side, making sure it was indeed intact.
She probably has information about Aerobin.
Whom Adian would soon begin hunting, once his god's damned wound was finally healed, regardless of whether Aelin deemed him fit. And then he'd cut the king of the assassins into little tiny pieces over many, many days.
Yet she doesn't want you to hear it.
Adian said,
I think she finds everyone but Aelin boring. Biggest disappointment of my life.
A lie, and he didn't know why he said it. But Rowan smiled a bit.
I'm glad she found a female friend.
Adian marveled for a heartbeat at the softness in the warrior's face, until Rowan shifted his eyes toward him and they were full of ice.
Aelin's court will be a new one, different from any other in the world, where the old ways are honored again. You're going to learn them, and I'm going to teach you.
I know the old ways.
You're going to learn them again.
Adian's shoulders pushed back as he rose to his full height.
I'm the general of the Bane and a prince of both Ash River and Galathinius houses. I'm not some untrained foot soldier.
Rowan gave a sharp nod of agreement, and Adian supposed he should be flattered, until Rowan said,
My cadre, as Aelin likes to call them, was a lethal unit because we stuck together and abided by the same code. Maeve might be a sadist, but she ensured that we all understood and followed it. Aelin would never force us into anything. And our code will be different, better than Maeve's. You and I are going to form the backbone of this court. We will shape and decide our own code.
What?
Obedience and blind loyalty?
He didn't feel like getting a lecture. Even if Rowan was right, and every word out of the prince's mouth was one that Adian had dreamed of hearing for a decade. He should have been the one to initiate this conversation.
Gods above,
he'd had this conversation with Ren weeks ago. Rowan's eyes glittered.
To protect and serve.
Aelin?
He could do that. He had already planned on doing that.
Aelin. And each other. And Terrison.
No room for argument. No hint of doubt. A small part of Adian understood why his cousin had offered the prince the blood oath.
Who is that?
Lysandra said too innocently, as Aelin escorted her up the stairs. Rowan, Aelin said, kicking open the apartment door.
He's spectacularly built, she mused. I've never been with a fey male.
Or female, for that matter.
Aelin shook her head to try to clear the image from her mind.
He's...
She swallowed. Lysandra was grinning, and Aelin hissed, setting down the bags on the great room floor and shutting the door.
Stop that.
Hmm, was all Lysandra said, dropping her boxes and bags beside Aelin's.
Well, I have two things. One, Nezrin sent me a note this morning saying that you had a new, very muscled guest staying and to bring some clothes. So I brought clothes. Looking at our guest, I think Nezrin undersold him a good deal, so the clothes might be tight. Not that I'm objecting to that one bit, but he can use them until you get others.
Thank you, she said, and Lysandra waved a slender hand.
She'd thank Philique later.
The other thing I brought you is news. Arubin received a report last night that two prison wagons were spotted heading south to Morath, chock full of all those missing people.
She wondered if Kaol knew, and if he had tried to stop it. Does he know that former magic wielders are being targeted? A nod.
He's been tracking which people disappear and which get sent south in the prison wagons. He's looking into all his clients' lineages now, no matter how the families tried to conceal their histories after magic was banned, to see if he can use anything to his advantage.
It's something to consider when dealing with him, given your talents.
Aelin chewed on her lip.
Thank you for telling me that, too.
Fantastic. Arubin, Lorkin, the King, the Volg, the Key, Dorian. She had half a mind to stuff her face with every remaining morsel of food in the kitchen.
Just prepare yourself.
Lysandra glanced at a small pocket watch.
I need to go. I have a lunch appointment.
No doubt why Evangeline wasn't with her. She was almost to the door when Aelin said, How much longer? Until you're free of your debts.
I still have a great deal to pay off, so... A while.
Lysandra paced a few steps, and then caught herself.
Clarice keeps adding money as Evangeline grows, claiming that someone so beautiful would have made her double, triple what she originally told me.
That's despicable.
What can I do?
Lysandra held up her wrist, where the tattoo had been inked.
She'll hunt me until the day I die, and I can't run with Evangeline.
I could dig Clarice a grave no one would ever discover, Aelin said, and meant it. Lysandra knew she meant it, too.
Not yet. Not now.
You say the word, and it's done. Lysandra's smile was a thing of savage, dark beauty. Standing before a crate in the cavernous warehouse, Kaol studied the map Aelin had just handed him. He focused on the blank spots, trying not to stare at the warrior prince on guard by the door. It was hard to avoid doing so when Rowan's presence somehow sucked out all the air in the warehouse. Then there was the matter of the delicately pointed ears peeking out from the short silver hair.
Fay.
He'd never seen one other than Aelin in those brief, petrifying moments. And Rowan. Conveniently, in all her storytelling, Aelin had forgotten to mention that the prince was so handsome. A handsome fey prince, whom she'd spent months living and training with, while Kaol's own life fell apart, while people died because of her actions. Rowan was watching Kaol as if he might be dinner. Depending on his fey form, that might not be too far wrong. Every instinct was screaming at him to run, despite the fact that Rowan had been nothing but polite. Distant and intense, but polite.
Still,
Kaol didn't need to see the prince in action to know that he would be dead before he could even draw his sword.
You know he won't bite, Aelin crooned.
Kaol leveled a stare at her. Can you just explain what these maps are for?
Anything you, Ress, or Brello can fill in regarding these gaps in the castle defenses would be appreciated, she said.
Not an answer. There was no sign of Adian among the stacked crates, but the general was probably listening from somewhere nearby with his keen fey hearing.
For you to bring down the clock tower?
Kaol asked, folding up the map and tucking it into the inner pocket of his tunic.
Maybe,
she said. He tried not to bristle, but there was something settled about her now, as if some invisible tension in her face had vanished. He tried not to look toward the door again.
I haven't heard from Ress or Brello for a few days.
he said instead.
I'll make contact soon.
She nodded, pulling out a second map, this one of the labyrinthian network of the sewers, and weighted down the ends with whatever small blades she had on her. A good number of them, apparently.
Aerobin learned that the missing prisoners were taken to Morath last night.
Did you know?
Another failure that fell on his shoulders.
Another disaster.
No.
They can't have gotten far. You could gather a team and ambush the wagons.
I know I could.
Are you going to?
He laid a hand on the map.
Did you bring me here to prove a point about my uselessness?
She straightened.
I asked you to come because I thought it would be helpful for the both of us. We're both under a fair amount of pressure these days.
Her turquoise and gold eyes were calm, unfazed.
Kaol said,
When do you make your move?
Soon.
Again, not an answer. He said as evenly as he could.
Anything else I should know?
I'd start avoiding the sewers.
It's your death warrant if you don't.
There are people trapped down there.
We found the nests, but no sign of the prisoners. I won't abandon them.
That's all well and good, she said, and he clenched his teeth at the dismissal in her tone. But there are worse things than Vol grunts patrolling the sewers, and I bet they won't turn a blind eye to anyone in their territory. I would weigh the risks if I were you.
She dragged a hand through her hair.
So, are you going to ambush the prison wagons?
Of course I am.
Even though the rebels' numbers were down. So many of their people were either fleeing the city altogether, or refusing to risk their necks in an increasingly futile battle.
Was that concern flickering in her eyes?
But she said, They use warded locks on the wagons, and the doors are reinforced with iron. Bring the right tools. He drew in a breath to snap at her about talking down to him, but she would know about the wagons. She'd spent weeks in one.
He couldn't quite meet her stare as he straightened up to go. Tell Falik that Prince Rowan says thank you for the clothes, Aelin said. What the hell was she talking about? Perhaps it was another jab.
So he made for the door,
where Rowan stepped aside with a murmured farewell. Nezrin had told him she'd spent the evening with Adian and Aelin, but he hadn't realized they might be friends. He hadn't considered that Nezrin might wind up unable to resist the allure of Aelin Galathinius. Though he supposed that Aelin was a queen, she did not falter. She did not do anything but plow ahead, burning bright. Even if it meant killing Dorian. They hadn't spoken of it since the day of Adian's rescue. But it still hung between them, and when she went to free magic, Kaol would again have the proper precautions in place. Because he did not think she would put her sword down the next time.
Chapter 34 Aelin knew she had things to do. Vital things. Terrible things. But she could sacrifice one day. Keeping to the shadows whenever possible, she spent the afternoon showing Rowan the city, from the elegant residential districts to the markets crammed with vendors selling goods for the summer solstice in 2 weeks. There was no sign or scent of Lorcan, thank the gods, but the king's men were posted at a few busy intersections, giving Aelin an opportunity to point them out to Rowan. He studied them with trained efficiency, his keen sense of smell enabling him to pick out which ones were still human and which were inhabited by lesser Volg demons. From the look on his face, she honestly felt a little bad for any guard that came across him, demon or human. A little, but not much. Especially given that their presence alone somewhat ruined her plans for a peaceful, quiet day. She wanted to show Rowan the good parts of the city, before dragging him into its underbelly. So she took him to one of Nezrin's family bakeries, where she went so far as to buy a few of those pear tarts. At the docks, Rowan even convinced her to try some pan-fried trout. She'd once sworn never to eat fish, and had cringed as the fork had neared her mouth. But the damned thing was delicious. She ate her entire fish, then snuck bites of Rowan's, to his snarling dismay.
Here, Rowan was here with her in Rifthold, and there was so much more she wanted him to see. To learn about what her life had been like,
She'd never wanted to share any of it before. Even when she'd heard the crack of a whip after lunch, as they cooled themselves by the water, she'd wanted him with her to witness it. He'd silently stood with a hand on her shoulder as they watched the cluster of chained slaves hauling cargo onto one of the ships. Watched, and could do nothing. Soon, she promised herself. Putting an end to that was a high priority. They meandered back through the market stalls, one after another, until the smell of roses and lilies wafted by, the river breeze sweeping petals of every shape and color past their feet, as the flower girls shouted about their wares. She turned to him. "If you were a gentleman, you'd buy me..." Rowan's face had gone blank, his eyes hollow as he stared at one of the flower girls in the center of the square, a basket of hothouse peonies on her thin arm. Young, pretty, dark-haired, and... Oh, gods. She shouldn't have brought him here. Lyria had sold flowers in the market. She'd been a poor flower girl before Rowan had spotted her, and instantly known she was his mate. A fairy tale, until she'd been slaughtered by enemy forces, pregnant with Rowan's child. Aelin clenched and unclenched her fingers. Any words lodged in her throat. Rowan was still staring at the girl, who smiled at a passing woman, aglow with some inner light.
"I didn't deserve her," Rowan said quietly.
Aelin swallowed hard. There were wounds in both of them that had yet to heal. But this one, truth. As always, she could offer him one truth in exchange for another. "I didn't deserve Sam." He looked at her at last. She'd do anything to get rid of the agony in his eyes. Anything. His gloved fingers brushed her own, then dropped back to his side. She clenched her hand into a fist again. "Come, I want to show you something." Aelin scrounged up some dessert from the street vendors while Rowan waited in a shadowed alley. Now, sitting on one of the wooden rafters in the gilded dome of the darkened royal theater, Aelin munched on a lemon cookie and swung her legs in the open air below. The space was the same as she remembered it, but the silence, the darkness. "This used to be my favorite place in the entire world," she said, her words too loud in the emptiness. Sunlight poured in from the roof door they'd broken into, illuminating the rafters and the golden dome, gleaming faintly off the polished brass banisters and the blood-red curtains of the stage below. "Arobin owns a private box, so I went any chance I could. The nights I didn't feel like dressing up or being seen, or maybe the nights I had a job and only an hour free, I'd creep in here through that door and listen." Rowan finished his cookie and gazed at the dark space below. He'd been so quiet for the past 30 minutes, as if he'd pulled back into a place where she couldn't reach him. She nearly sighed with relief as he said,
"I've never seen an orchestra, or a theater like this, crafted around sound and luxury. Even in Doranel, the theaters and amphitheaters are ancient, with benches or just steps."
"There's no place like this anywhere, perhaps, even in Terrasen."
"Then you'll have to build one."
"With what money? You think people are going to be happy to starve while I build a theater for my own pleasure?"
"Perhaps not right away, but if you believe one would benefit the city, the country, then do it. Artists are essential."
Florine had said as much. Aelin sighed. "This place has been shut down for months, and yet I swear I can still hear the music floating in the air."
Rowan angled his head, studying the dark with those immortal senses. "Perhaps the music does live on, in some form."
The thought made her eyes sting. "I wish you could have heard it. I wish you had been there to hear Pitor conduct the Stygian suite. Sometimes I feel like I'm still sitting down in that box, 13 years old, and weeping from the sheer glory of it."
"You cried."
She could almost see the memories of their training this spring flash in his eyes. All those times music had calmed or unleashed her magic. It was a part of her soul, as much as he was. "The final movement? Every damn time. I would go back to the keep and have the music in my mind for days, even as I trained or killed or slept. It was a kind of madness, loving that music. It was why I started playing the pianoforte,
so I could come home at night and make my poor attempt at replicating it. She'd never told anyone that. Never taken anyone here, either. Rowan said,
Is there a pianoforte in here?
I haven't played in months and months, and this is a horrible idea for about a dozen different reasons, she said for the 10th time, as she finished rolling back the curtains on the stage. She'd stood here before, when Arabin's patronage had earned them invitations to galas, held on the stage for the sheer thrill of walking on sacred space. But now, amid the gloom of the dead theater, lit with a single candle Rowan had found, it felt like standing in a tomb. The chairs of the orchestra were still arranged as they probably had been the night the musicians had walked out to protest the massacres in Endovier and Calicala. They were all still unaccounted for, and considering the array of miseries the king now heaped upon the world, death would have been the kindest option. Clenching her jaw, Aelin leashed the familiar, writhing anger. Rowan was standing beside the pianoforte near the front right of the stage, running a hand over the smooth surface, as if it were a prize horse. She hesitated before the magnificent instrument.
It seems like sacrilege to play that thing, she said,
the word echoing loudly in the space.
Since when are you the religious type anyway?
Rowan gave her a crooked smile.
Where should I stand to best hear it?
You might be in for a lot of pain at first.
Self-conscious today, too?
If Lorcan's snooping about, she grumbled. I'd rather he not report back to Maeve that I'm lousy at playing. She pointed to a spot on the stage. There. Stand there and stop talking, you insufferable bastard. He chuckled and moved to the spot she'd indicated. She swallowed as she slid onto the smooth bench and folded back the lid, revealing the gleaming white and black keys beneath. She positioned her feet on the pedals, but made no move to touch the keyboard.
I haven't played since before Nehemia died, she admitted,
the words too heavy.
We can come back another day, if you want.
A gentle, steady offer. His silver hair glimmered in the dim candlelight. There might not be another day. And I would consider my life very sad indeed if I never played again. He nodded and crossed his arms. A silent order. She faced the keys and slowly set her hands on the ivory. It was smooth and cool and waiting. A great beast of sound and joy about to be awakened. I need to warm up, she blurted, and plunged in without another word, playing as softly as she could. Once she had started seeing the notes in her mind again, when muscle memory had her fingers reaching for those familiar chords, she began. It was not the sorrowful, lovely piece she had once played for Dorian, and it was not the light, dancing melodies she'd played for sport. It was not the complex and clever pieces she had played for Nehemia and Kaol. This piece was a celebration, a reaffirmation of life, of glory, of the pain and beauty in breathing. Perhaps that was why she'd gone to hear it performed every year, after so much killing and torture and punishment, as a reminder of what she was, of what she struggled to keep. Up and up it built, the sound breaking from the pianoforte like the heart song of a god, until Rowan drifted over to stand beside the instrument, until she whispered to him, Now, and the crescendo shattered into the world, note after note after note. The music crashed around them, roaring through the emptiness of the theater. The hollow silence that had been inside her for so many months now overflowed with sound. She brought the piece home to its final explosive triumphant chord. When she looked up, panting slightly, Rowan's eyes were lined with silver, his throat bobbing. Somehow, after all this time, her warrior prince still managed to surprise her. He seemed to struggle for words, but he finally breathed.
Show me. Show me how you did that.
So she obliged him. They spent the better part of an hour seated together on the bench, Aelin teaching him the basics of the pianoforte, explaining the sharps and flats, the pedals, the notes and chords. When Rowan heard someone at last coming to investigate the music, they slipped out.
She stopped at the Royal Bank, warning Rowan to wait in the shadows across the street as she again sat in the master's office, while one of his underlings rushed in and out on her business. She eventually left with another bag of gold. Vital, now that there was one more mouth to feed and body to clothe. And found Rowan exactly where she'd left him, pissed off that she'd refused to let him accompany her. But he'd raised too many questions.
"So you're using your own money to support us?" Rowan asked as they slipped down a side street.
A flock of beautifully dressed young women passed by on the sunny avenue beyond the alley and gaped at the hooded, powerfully built male who stormed past. And then all turned to admire the view from behind. Aelin flashed her teeth at them. "For now," she said to him.
"And what will you do for money later?"
She glanced sidelong at him. "It'll be taken care of."
"By whom?"
"Me."
"Explain."
"You'll find out soon enough."
She gave him a little smile that she knew drove him insane. Rowan made to grab her by the shoulder, but she ducked away from his touch.
"Uh-uh. Better not move too swiftly, or someone might notice."
He snarled, the sound definitely not human, and she chuckled. Annoyance was better than guilt and grief.
"Just be patient, and don't get your feathers ruffled."
Chapter 35
Gods, he hated the smell of their blood.
But damn if it wasn't a glorious thing to be covered in when 24 Vog lay dead around him, and good people were finally safe. Drenched in Vog blood from head to toe, Kaol Westfall searched for a clean bit of fabric with which to wipe down his black-stained blade, but came up empty. Across the hidden clearing, Nezirin was doing the same. He'd killed 4, she'd taken down 7. Kaol knew only because he'd been watching her the entire time. She'd paired off with someone else during the ambush. He'd apologized for snapping at her the other night, but she'd just nodded, and still teamed up with another rebel. But now, she gave up trying to wipe down her blade and looked toward him. Her midnight eyes were bright, and even with her face splattered in black blood, her smile, relieved, a bit wild with the thrill of the fight, their victory, was beautiful. The word clanged through him. Kaol frowned, and the expression was instantly wiped from her face. His mind was always a jumble after a fight, as if it had been spun around and around and twisted upside down and then given a heavy dose of liquor. But he strode toward her. They'd done this. Together. They'd saved these people. More at once than they'd ever rescued before, and with no loss of life beyond the Vog. Gore and blood were splattered on the grassy forest floor. The only remnants of the decapitated Vog bodies that had already been hauled away and dumped behind a boulder. When they left, they'd paid the body's former owners the tribute of burning them. 3 of his group had set to unchaining the huddled prisoners now seated in the grass. The Vog bastards had stuffed so many of them into the 2 wagons that Kaol had nearly gagged at the smell. Each wagon had only a small barred window high up on the wall, and a man had fainted inside. But all of them were safe now. He wouldn't stop until the others still hidden in the city were out of harm's way as well. A woman reached up with her filthy hands, her nails split and fingertips swollen, as if she'd tried to claw her way out of whatever hellhole she'd been kept in.
"Thank you,"
she whispered, her voice hoarse, probably from screaming that had gone unanswered. Kaol's throat tightened as he gave the woman's hands a gentle squeeze, mindful of her near-broken fingers, and stepped to where Nezirin was now wiping her blade on the grass.
"You fought well,"
he told her.
"I know I did."
Nezirin looked over her shoulder at him.
"We need to get them to the river. The boats won't wait forever."
Fine. He didn't expect warmth or camaraderie after a battle, despite that smile, but...
"Maybe once we're back in Rifthold, we can go for a drink."
He needed one. Badly. Nezirin rose from her crouch, and he fought the urge to wipe a splatter of black blood from her tan cheek. The hair she'd tied back had come loose, and the warm forest breeze set the strands floating past her face.
"I thought we were friends," she said.
We are friends, he said carefully.
Friends don't spend time with each other only when they're feeling sorry for themselves, or bite each other's heads off for asking difficult questions.
I told you I was sorry for snapping the other night.
She sheathed her blade. I'm fine with distracting each other for whatever reason, Kaol. But at least be honest about it.
He opened his mouth to object, but maybe she was right. I do like your company, he said. I wanted to go for a drink to celebrate, not brood. And I'd like to go with you.
She pursed her lips. That was the most half-assed attempt at flattery I've ever heard. But fine. I'll join you.
The worst part was that she didn't even sound mad. She genuinely meant it. He could go drinking with or without her, and she wouldn't particularly care. The thought didn't sit well. Personal conversation decidedly over. Nezrin surveyed the clearing, the wagon and the carnage.
Why now? The king has had 10 years to do this. Why the sudden rush to get these people all down to Morath? What's it building to?
Some of the rebels turned their way. Kaol studied the bloody aftermath as if it were a map. Aelin Galathinius's return might have started it, Kaol said, aware of those who listened.
No, Nezrin said simply. Aelin announced herself barely 2 months ago. Something this large. It's been in the works for a long, long time.
Sen, one of the leaders with whom Kaol met regularly, said, We should consider yielding the city. Move to other places where their foothold isn't as secure. Maybe try to establish a border somehow. If Aelin Galathinius is lingering near Rifthold, we should meet with her. Maybe head for Terrasen, push Otterlin out, and hold the line.
We can't abandon Rifthold, Kaol said,
glancing at the prisoners being helped to their feet.
It might be suicide to stay,
Sen challenged. Some of the others nodded their agreement. Kaol opened his mouth, but Nezrin said,
We need to head for the river. Fast.
He gave her a grateful look, but she was already moving. Aelin waited until everyone was asleep, and the full moon had risen, before climbing out of bed, careful not to jostle Rowan. She slipped into the closet and dressed swiftly, strapping on the weapons she'd casually dumped there that afternoon. Neither male had commented when she'd plucked Damaris from the dining table, claiming she wanted to clean it. She strapped the ancient blade onto her back along with Goldrin, the two hilts peeking over either shoulder as she stood in front of the closet mirror and hastily braided back her hair. It was short enough now that braiding had become a nuisance, and the front bits slipped out, but at least it wasn't in her face. She crept from the closet, a spare cloak in hand, past the bed where Rowan's tattooed torso gleamed in the light of the full moon, leaking in from the window. He didn't stir as she snuck from the bedroom, and out of the apartment, no more than a shadow. Chapter 36 It didn't take long for Aelin to set her trap. She could feel the eyes monitoring her as she found the patrol led by one of the more sadistic Volg commanders. Thanks to Kaol and Nezrin's reports, she knew their new hideouts. What Kaol and Nezrin didn't know, what she had spent these nights sneaking out to track on her own, was which sewer entrances the commanders used when going to speak to one of the wordhounds. They seemed to prefer the most ancient waterways to swimming through the filth of the more recent main tunnels. She'd been getting as close as she dared, which usually was not near enough to overhear anything. Tonight, she slipped down into the sewers after the commander, her steps nearly silent on the slick stones, trying to stifle her nausea at the stench. She'd waited until Kaol, Nezrin, and their top lieutenants were out of the city, chasing down those prison wagons, if only so no one would get in her way again. She couldn't risk it. As she walked, keeping far enough behind the Volg commander that he wouldn't hear, she began speaking softly.
I got the key, she said,
a sigh of relief passing over her lips. Twisting her voice just as Lysandra had showed her, she replied in a male tenor.
You brought it with you?
Of course I did. Now show me where you wanted to hide it.
patience,
she said, trying not to smile too much as she turned down a corner, creeping along.
It's just up this way.
On she went, offering whispers of conversation, until she neared the crossroads where the Volg commanders liked to meet with their wordhound overseer, and fell silent. There, she dumped the spare cloak she'd brought, and then backtracked to a ladder leading up to the street. Aelin's breath caught as she pushed against the grate, and it mercifully gave. She heaved herself onto the street, her hands unsteady. For a moment, she contemplated lying there on the filthy, wet cobblestones, savoring the free air around her. But he was too close, so she silently sealed the grate again. It took only a minute before near-silent boots scraped on stone below, and a figure moved past the ladder, heading to where she'd left the cape, tracking her as he'd done all night. As she'd let him do all night. And when Lorkin walked right into that den of Volg commanders and the wordhound that had come to retrieve their reports, when the clash of weapons and roar of dying filled her ears, Aelin merely sauntered down the street, whistling to herself. Aelin was striding down an alley 3 blocks from the warehouse when a force akin to a stone wall slammed her face first into the side of a brick building. "You little bitch," Lorkin snarled in her ear. Both of her arms were somehow already pinned behind her back, his legs digging hard enough into hers that she couldn't move them. "Hello, Lorkin," she said sweetly, turning her throbbing face as much as she could. From the corner of her eye, she could make out cruel features beneath his dark hood, along with onyx eyes and matching shoulder-length hair, and, damn, elongated canines shone far too near her throat. One hand gripped her arms like a steel vise. Lorkin used the other to push her head against the damp brick so hard her cheek scraped. "You think that was funny?" "It was worth a shot, wasn't it?" He reeked of blood. That awful, otherworldly Volg blood. He pushed her face a little harder into the wall, his body an immovable force against her. "I'm going to kill you." "Ah, about that," she said, and shifted her wrist just enough for him to feel the blade she'd flicked free in the moment before she'd sensed his attack, the steel now resting against his groin. "Immortality seems like a long, long time to go without your favorite body part."
"I'll rip out your throat before you can move."
She pressed the blade harder against him. "Big risk to take, isn't it?" For a moment, Lorkin remained unmoving, still shoving her into the wall with the force of 5 centuries of lethal training. Then cool air nipped at her neck, her back. By the time she whirled, Lorkin was several paces away. In the darkness, she could barely make out the granite-hewn features, but she remembered enough from that day in Dorinel to guess that beneath his hood, the unforgiving face was livid. "Honestly," she said, leaning against the wall, "I'm a little surprised you fell for it. You must think I'm truly stupid."
"Where's Rowan?"
he sneered, his close-fitting dark clothes, armored with black metal at the forearms and shoulders, seemed to gobble up the dim light.
"Still warming your bed?"
She didn't want to know how Lorkin knew that. "Isn't that all you pretty males are good for?" She looked him up and down, marking the many weapons both visible and concealed. Massive. As massive as Rowan and Adian. And utterly unimpressed by her. "Did you kill all of them? There were only 3 by my count."
"There were 6 of them. And one of those stone demons, you bitch. And you knew it."
So he had found a way to kill one of the wordhounds. Interesting. And good. "You know, I'm really rather tired of being called that. You'd think 5 centuries would give you enough time to come up with something more creative."
"Come a little closer, and I'll show you just what 5 centuries can do."
"Why don't I show you what happens when you whip my friends, you spineless prick?" Violence danced across those brutal features.
"Such a big mouth for someone without her fire tricks."
"Such a big mouth for someone who needs to mind his surroundings."
Rowan's knife was angled along Lorkin's throat before he could so much as blink.
She'd been wondering how long it would take him to find her. He'd probably awakened the moment she pushed back the covers.
"Start talking,"
Rowan ordered Lorcan. Lorcan gripped his sword, a mighty beautiful weapon that she had no doubt had ended many lives on killing fields in distant lands.
"You don't want to get into this fight right now. Give me a good reason not to spill your blood,"
Rowan said.
"If I die, Maeve will offer aid to the King of Otterlin against you."
"Bullshit," Aelin spat.
"Friends close, but enemies closer, right?"
Lorcan said. Slowly, Rowan let go of him and stepped away. All three of them monitored every movement the others made, until Rowan was at Aelin's side, his teeth bared at Lorcan. The aggression pouring off the Fey Prince was enough to make her jumpy.
"You made a fatal mistake,"
Lorcan said to her.
"The moment you showed my queen that vision of you with the key."
He flicked his black eyes to Rowan.
"And you, you stupid fool, allying yourself, binding yourself to a mortal queen. What will you do, Rowan, when she grows old and dies? What about when she looks old enough to be your mother? Will you still share her bed? Still..." "That's enough,"
Rowan said softly. She didn't let one flicker of the emotions that shot through her show. Didn't dare to even think about them for fear Lorcan could smell them. Lorcan just laughed.
"You think you beat Maeve? She allowed you to walk out of Doranel. Both of you."
Aelin yawned. "Honestly, Rowan, I don't know how you put up with him for so many centuries. 5 minutes and I'm bored to tears."
"Watch yourself, girl," Lorcan said. "Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not in a week. But someday you will trip up. And I'll be waiting."
"Really, you Fey males and your dramatic speeches." She turned to walk away, a move she could make only because of the prince standing between them. But she looked back over her shoulder, dropping all pretense of amusement, of boredom. Let that killing calm rise close enough to the surface that she knew there was nothing human in her eyes, as she said to Lorcan,
"I will never forget, not for one moment, what you did to him that day in Doranel.
Your miserable existence is at the bottom of my priority list, but one day, Lorcan..." She smiled a little.
"One day I'll come to claim that debt, too. Consider tonight a warning."
Aelin had just unlocked the warehouse door when Rowan's deep voice purred from behind.
"Busy night, princess."
She hauled open the door, and the two of them slipped into the near black warehouse, illuminated only by a lantern near the back stairs. She took her time locking the sliding door behind her.
"Busy, but enjoyable."
"You're going to have to try a lot harder to sneak past me,"
Rowan said, the words laced with a growl.
"You and Adian are insufferable."
Thank the gods Lorcan hadn't seen Adian, hadn't scented his heritage.
"I was perfectly safe."
Lie. She hadn't been sure whether Lorcan would even show up, or whether he would fall for her little trap. Rowan poked her cheek gently, and pain rippled.
"You're lucky scraping you is all he did. The next time you sneak out to pick a fight with Lorcan, you will tell me beforehand."
"I will do no such thing. It's my damn business, and..."
"It's not just your business. Not anymore. You will take me along with you the next time."
"The next time I sneak out," she seethed, "if I catch you following me like some overprotective nursemaid, I will..."
"You'll what?"
He stepped up close enough to share breath with her, his fangs flashing.
In the light of the lantern,
she could clearly see his eyes, and he could see hers as she silently said,
"I don't know what I'll do, you bastard, but I'll make your life a living hell for it."
He snarled, and the sound stroked down her skin as she read the unspoken words in his eyes.
"Stop being stubborn. Is this some attempt to cling to your independence?"
"And so what if it is?"
she shot back.
"Just let me do these things on my own."
"I can't promise that,"
he said, the dim light caressing his tan skin,
the elegant tattoo. She punched him in the bicep, hurting herself more than him. Just because you're older and stronger doesn't mean you're entitled to order me around.
It's exactly because of those things that I can do whatever I please.
She let out a high-pitched sound and went to pinch his side, and he grabbed her hand, squeezing it tightly, dragging her a step closer to him. She tilted her head back to look at him. For a moment, alone in that warehouse with nothing but the crates keeping them company, she allowed herself to take in his face, those green eyes, the strong jaw. Immortal, unyielding, blooded with power.
Brute.
Brat.
She loosed a breathy laugh.
Did you really lure Lorcan into a sewer with one of those creatures?
It was such an easy trap that I'm actually disappointed he fell for it. Rowan chuckled.
You never stop surprising me.
He hurt you. I'm never going to forgive that.
Plenty of people have hurt me. If you're going to go after everyone, you'll have a busy life ahead of you.
She didn't smile. What he said about me getting old?
Don't. Just don't start with that. Go to sleep.
What about you?
He studied the warehouse door.
I wouldn't put it past Lorcan to return the favor you dealt him tonight. He forgets and forgives even less easily than you do. Especially when someone threatens to cut off his manhood.
At least I said it would be a big mistake, she said with a fiendish grin. I was tempted to say little.
Rowan laughed, his eyes dancing. Then you definitely would have been dead.
Chapter 37. There were men screaming in the dungeons. He knew because the demon had forced him to take a walk there, past every cell and rack. He thought he might know some of the prisoners, but he couldn't remember their names. He could never remember their names when the man on the throne ordered the demon to watch their interrogation. The demon was happy to oblige. Day after day after day. The king never asked them any questions. Some of the men cried, some screamed, and some stayed silent, defiant even. Yesterday, one of them, young, handsome, familiar, had recognized him and begged. He begged for mercy, insisted he knew nothing, and wept. But there was nothing he could do, even as he watched them suffer, even as the chambers filled with the reek of burning flesh and the coppery tang of blood. The demon savored it, growing stronger each day it went down there and breathed in their pain. He added their suffering to the memories that kept him company, and let the demon take him back to those dungeons of agony and despair the next day, and the next.
Chapter 38.
Aelin didn't dare to go back to the sewers, not until she was certain Lorcan was out of the area and the Volg weren't lurking about. The next night, they were all eating a dinner Adian had scraped together from whatever was lying around the kitchen, when the front door opened, and Lysandra breezed in with a chirped hello that had them all releasing the weapons they'd grabbed.
"How do you do that?" Adian demanded, as she paraded into the kitchen.
"What a miserable-looking meal," was all Lysandra said, peering over Adian's shoulder at the spread of bread, pickled vegetables, cold eggs, fruit, dried meat, and leftover breakfast pastries.
"Can't any of you cook?"
Aelin, who'd been swiping grapes off Rowan's plate, snorted. "Breakfast, it seems, is the only meal any of us are decent at. And this one," she jabbed a thumb in Rowan's direction, "only knows how to cook meat on a stick over a fire." Lysandra nudged Aelin down the bench and squeezed onto the end, her blue dress like liquid silk as she reached for some bread.
"Pathetic. Utterly pathetic for such esteemed and mighty leaders."
Adian braced his arms on the table.
"Make yourself at home, why don't you?"
Lysandra kissed the air between them.
"Hello, General. Good to see you're looking well."
Aelin would have been content to sit back and watch, until Lysandra turned those up-tilted green eyes toward Rowan.
"I don't think we were introduced the other day. Her queenliness had something rather urgent to tell me.
A sly cat's glance in Aelin's direction. Rowan, seated on Adian's right, cocked his head to the